abruptly. Kevin poured what was left of the water into our glasses, then drained his. A bird hopped brightly on the wall. The sun was shining. It was steamy then after the rain, like we were in the tropics. 100 meters down the road was the wide sandy beach. I envied him, in a way. A house of his own. The sea on his doorstep. Knowing what his life consisted of, and where it was rooted. A life of limits isn't necessarily easier, but there is something clarifying in it, and beauty makes up for a lot. It was late afternoon when I left Kevin, heading back to town along the sea road. Crossing the bridge, I could see the hostel where I had lived that first summer. To the left, the low, drab skyline of Stephen Street, and to the right, the docks, where Eddie's showroom and flat had been. Then I was back on the relief road, which had finally been built, carved right through the town center. Houses bulldozed to make way. High walls of forbidden gray stone had been erected either side of it, so that I felt I was driving past a prison, or out of one. The house creaks and ticks, as though light-footed creatures are living their little lives all around me. I sit down at the kitchen table and make a list for tomorrow. Harry is coming for brunch. He said we are going to have a reverse housewarming. I asked him what that meant, and he said that it was when, instead of imprinting yourself upon a new place through objects, you think about what the place you're leaving has given you, the intangible things, and how you bring those with you to the next life. By which I mean, he said, the next place you live. I nodded. It sounded interesting. Is that a ritual, I asked? Where do they do this? He shrugged, smiling. I made it up. I picture Harry in the kitchen here, conjuring on my behalf. I remember what he said once about how everywhere you leave stays with you. In a satchel on the table in front of me, in a wallet-sized folder that holds nothing else, is a photo of my mother. It is my favorite of the dozens I've held on to. She is 4 years old, and the look of bliss on her face as she stands ankle-deep in the Pacific is more than I know what to do with. Her head is tilted up, and her eyes are closed, as though she has heard a whisper from on high. I look at that child, and I hold her in the kind of awe in which my mother once held me. I feel my mother less acutely than I did even 1 week ago. But what I lose in intensity, I seem to gain in diffusiveness. I feel her everywhere. I think of her belongings, the few I saved. From where I'm sitting, I can see them in a box on the landing, awaiting transport to the next life. Acknowledgements. Thanks to the Arts Council of Ireland for their ongoing and generous support. Thank you to Brendan Barrington, Lucy Luck, Mary Costello, Una Mannion, Adam, Kieran, and the Searson family of Monkstown. This novel grew out of a short story, City of Glass, which appeared in Town and Country, New Irish Short Stories. Thanks to Kevin Berry, who edited this anthology. The lines, "What does it mean," he asks, "when people say she's out of her misery? Why the present tense? Who's this she we're speaking of?" are based on lines from Roland Barthes' Morning Diary. In the sentence, "She's no longer suffering," to what, to whom does she refer? What does that present tense mean?
Straying, a novel, was written by Molly McCloskey and read by Katie Bader. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Straying, a novel, is available in print from Scribner.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.